from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Who is that immaculately dressed man in the Good Atheist t-shirt?
That man slash woman is a fashionable person wearing the latest gear coming straight from the goodatheist.net, baby.
How can I get my hands on one of these shirts?
On just one? Don't be a fool, man. Get three, even though there's only one design. Jesus saves, you need to get it.
Buy this or burn in hell.
Welcome to the goodatheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
We are episode 59. Yeah, I'm sort of looking at the episode numbers now, trying to memorize them. Trying to give myself a feel and scope for the stuff that we generally do.
Trying not to fuck up is more like it.
Just putting the research down. Just going to take
what Jake vomits up and spit out the truth.
Hey, shut your mouth. It really is sort of like to get an impression of largeness. And today we're going to be talking about inspiration, and we're also going to be talking about agnosticism, the subject that I had promised to talk about on the free show, a promise that I intend to keep, especially seeing as how people, I got a couple requests by people who are not regular contributors to the site saying, I want to hear this podcast. You enticed me. And I was like, okay, all right. You know, I'll poke back if you wanted to hear it. I mean, I'm not going to deny you. I'm not going to go and say, like, fuck you, buddy. You can't hear me. That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right at all. The reason I wanted to talk about inspiration, I think, is because what I was saying before about not understanding the scope of what it is that we do. I didn't realize until very recently how I take a lot of things for granted about what it is that I'm doing and the kind of impact that what I do has, because you don't think about it. As far as you're concerned, it's a one-way thing, right? We press record, we put it out there, but honestly, dude...
Even when you beg for people for feedback, it very rarely does anybody reach out. I mean... One way that I see it is that we get a lot of people adding us on Facebook all the time.
Yeah, it's true. I guess it that's the advantage of social networking, the ability for people to kind of make passive connections, because it doesn't have to be active.
I don't know if they're even checking out what's going on, if they're just lurking, or what if there are people that secretly spy on me on Facebook. I'm a very boring Facebook person.
Mine is just as boring, I assure you. Just as boring.
Like status updates once a week. Sad.
You are a social networking god, sir.
Yeah, anybody that stalks me is going to probably die of boredom, unfortunately.
There you go. That's how you take care of all your stalkers. You bore them to death. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to do anything worth stalkering, and then I'll be left alone.
Pretty much.
So, yes, I realized to some degree that if you don't really understand the scope, and again, I mean, even with the amount of listeners that we get, it takes a while before you regularly have people that are going to comment and try to reach out. Because I think people are always a bit tentative at first. The same people that say, add us on Facebook, that don't end up actually saying anything, to which you ask, well, what was the purpose of you adding me if you weren't going to say hello, or at least maybe ask me the burning question that's on your mind or something? You know, the one that you don't even think to write about? I mean, there's got to be those people, right? The ones that just listen and have never interacted.
I enjoy it, though, because I always check out what's... Like, this is the way I look at it, is they add me, and then they check out what I got floating around. And even though I am boring on a day-to-day basis, there was some interesting activity. There's some incriminating photographs. Someone wants to delve into my life. They can get a pretty good kick out of it, I think. And I get the same thing looking back at them, especially the women.
Well, I would say that perhaps there is another kind of
advantage. Or the people from Europe, because I always love checking out their wacky European lives.
It's true. And I also love usually their funny and quirky use of the word of English in many of those Scandinavian countries, and how it just sort of pops up every once in a while and as an oddity. Because they're so weird over there. They seem weird.
Just talking a bit strange.
I just love it, though. It's like talking wrong, and I love it. But my point was that basically there might also be an advantage that I'm not seeing to the whole social networking thing. And this goes back to the topic that I wanted to mention before, inspiration. I was really trying to think about what inspired me to start the Good Atheist podcast. Like, what were the influences? What finally made me go, hey, let's do this, and even let's do this regularly? Because there's a difference between just doing it and then really doing it. And I thought to myself, well, if I could compile probably a pretty short list of people that I would rank as major influencers, and probably the biggest of all of them is Penn Jillette. Because he's the person whose style of talking and, you know, his mannerism, everything, it's very close to the way that I speak. And I thought to myself, you know, maybe there is more to it than that. Maybe in the process of really listening to someone that you can empathize with a lot, do you kind of pick up on what they're doing? Does their doing activity, like the fact that they're going out there and putting shit out there, following through with their ideas, discussing it, you know, taking a stance, doing something other than just sitting on your ass doing fucking nothing, and that require that you find people that at least think the way that you do, or talk the way that you do, or that you can empathize with to some degree, and through that empathy, that you might benefit from a form of inspiration. And that's what I was thinking. And the reason I was thinking about that was also because of one of our listeners, this guy called Jake Farr Wharton. He's down in Australia, and we listened to him last show. And I was thinking to myself, you know, not that there are similar mannerisms to the way that we talk, but there seems to be kind of a boisterousness to and theatrics to
a
the way
jolliness.
That he talks. Well, I guess you could call it that. And I thought to myself, did I have an influence in how he does his show, how he talks even, while he produces something that he claims was inspired from The Good Atheist? So whatever it is that he produces, whatever he decides to do with it, there is that fundamental fact. And you just, you know, you think to yourself, again, if you go back and I mentioned scope, when you don't really understand what it is that you're doing because you're just putting it out there, you don't realize the degree of empathy that's being created even while you're not around. We drop ourselves out there. We have conversations with people that we've never met. And they feel completely probably comfortable with us. And we've never interacted with them. But because they can empathize with us, some of them who may have similar interests and similar goals might feel inspired and then themselves produce something, some work that perhaps is inspiring other people as well. And that's what I think is the crazy awesome thing about inspiration, is that it can become contagious so long as you let yourself experience a lot of different people and ideas until you find the one that really suits you. And you'll find, I think...
Or
a body of people, right. One is not enough, usually, right? One is not... No person is an island. You need to have some kind of community, some kind of group. I was trying to... I reached out to Jake because I thought to myself, you know what? There... anybody that's trying and to put podcasts out there that have really just committed to it and are doing it, I'm like, I need to support that as well. You know, that is part of a support network of shows and of content that is being produced for other fellow atheists, people who can themselves suddenly become inspired by those works. So I think that what's necessary for inspiration on the part of the person already doing it is spreading it around, spreading it to other people. I think that's the duty if you're even trying to inspire.
Or inspiring people to be more passionate about atheism?
Well, I mean, not just that. I mean, there could be a variety of things. A person could listen to the show and think to themselves, hey, I feel really inspired to record a podcast, and it's going to be on, I don't know, guitars or some shit. And they're like, I don't know atheism as well as Jake and Ryan does.
You probably know it better than me.
But I'm really good at this miscellaneous activity. And just all of a sudden find that as part of their inspiration, or, you know, maybe they use that as an incentive to get more involved in a scene. It doesn't matter. Inspiration can sometimes be a bit of a kick, and sometimes it's in it for the long haul. I guess it all depends on how compatible the thing that inspires you is to what you actually want to do. And I think the closer it is to what you want to do, the more inspired you're going to feel. Probably the same reason why you listen to, say, a Good Atheist podcast and you think to yourself, man, I really want to start that music podcast or that other podcast. But it doesn't provide enough inspiration because we don't do the same things. And unfortunately, you're not learning from any of our mistakes. It's completely virgin territory, so you might feel overwhelmed again. And that, and you know, that's the flip side of inspiration. When a person feels absolutely overwhelmed by things, you know, like by the very nature of what they're trying to do. So I think that you always fight against these two forces, the creative forces of inspiration and the kind of nihilistic forces that you have when you think about you know, the work that is sometimes necessary to get to that point.
How big or small or whatever it is for you to give a shit.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to care about something a lot to devote the time that that's going to require, that's going to be required of you to complete this thing, to really complete something that you're going to find valuable and you're going to find rewarding. But for that to happen, you are going to experience a phenomenal amount of failure. And in that failure, I think that that's where we often feel like that we plateau. Of just that's all we notice. We notice the failures because they're much more common than the successes. The successes are rare. It's why when they happen, it feels so fucking fantastic.
And sometimes success doesn't feel like anything because it just doesn't register. While failure is always a good trout slapping you in the face.
Yeah, it's a smelly trout right in the mouth, you know, slapping you. And of course, you're always going to notice, but you don't notice the small victories that you make, mainly because the people that are inspired by you potentially never even reach out. All the success that you're having in inspiring people may be completely fucking lost on you. And I think that's unfortunate. And I let myself get it to that point quite a few times. Where I was just like, oh, I don't know if it's worth it. Because you look at it from an economic perspective, right? Everybody's economical. You're like, how much time am I going to devote to this? What am I doing? And you're just like, where's the reward, right? Where is the reward? And the reward is there. It's just that you're not seeing it in that perspective. It's a tough thing to put yourself in a positive mindset to be able to overwhelmingly see the success when there is so much still failure that to some degree I think haunts people, you know? There's this portion of us that feel always haunted by the past. Like, oh, well, there was a history of failure. Therefore, that's going to be the likely outcome. And you're like, that may be the outcome. But thinking that way, that is the enemy of inspiration. Because why would a person want to work when the conditions of failure are already set? And that's why in any inspiring story, that the reason why it maybe is easier to empathize with people that have done more than you, you know, that have produced more, that have been more successful, is that you at least have a measuring stick, you know, some kind of, well, this is what success is like. But when you can't define the areas of success for yourself, you're not going to find a lot of reward. I think the necessary round out thing that you have to do to be inspired and to maintain that inspiration is to be able to define for you what the successes are going to be and to be fair about them. You know, like sometimes you've got to take small victories. A small victory is a fucking fan letter for me that says, hey, you know, I don't really know how computers work, but I love your show. And I mean, I almost feel like that's some weird small victory that I've hooked someone on something they're afraid of, the internet, in order for them to listen to what I have to say. That is a delight, sir. That is a small victory. And I'm like, that's the kind of things that I always, myself, need to really keep track of. Otherwise, I do feel lost. And I do feel like, what is the purpose of what I'm doing? I probably feel the same way that lots of people who listen to this podcast feel all the fucking time. It is the nature of humanity to be so down on oneself, n'est-ce pas?
C'est vrai.
All right, here's the second subject I wanted to talk about, because I think I completed that quite well. The other thing I wanted to talk about was agnosticism. So I had a fan of the site who emailed. He was a pretty big patron, all right? So I felt the need to definitely address his question. I'm like, I owe you. You are a super patron. You give far more than what, you know, Yeah. I provide.
We might not give you a painting like Michelangelo or something, but...
we'll try.
Or statue?
No, no, you were... No, no, you had it, dude. You had it. I was like, nice. Michelangelo. Statue? No! You're thinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. You're thinking Raphael.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just covering my bases slash, you know, whatever.
It's good to cover one's bases. Mm. You make the definition of intelligence murkier by doing so.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, you might not get a valuable piece of art, but you will get some time on the radio show. Any of you patrons out there who want us to talk about anything, we are always happy to take... topic suggestions.
And my apologies in the past for not having for taking that relationship for granted with some of the fans. I know that one person in particular didn't want to renew his membership because he felt as though I didn't pay attention to what he had to say. And you know what? That is my failing. I'm like, he is my customer in a sense. He is my patron, and I lose him from not even responding to his suggestions and what have you. So that was my failing. Something that I'm definitely rectifying. I think it was a failing because I didn't fully appreciate the nature of that relationship. You sort of take it for granted because you're like, here I am producing all this stuff, give me money. And it is a very selfish attitude, mostly when you consider the fact that what really is your shit worth? You know, it's worthless. It's not worth anything. It's only worth what people are willing to pay for it. And obviously, in that mindset, I have to realize, well, it's worth something, but I need to continue to make it worth something. Otherwise... To someone who was previously sold on the idea, they're like, you've lost me. So the topic that this super patron had asked me to talk about was agnosticism, because he has a friend who is basically an agnostic, and they have, you know, arguments, I guess you could say, friendly debates, about what is the more logical position, agnosticism or atheism.
So there's two friends, one atheist and one agnostic. It's
right,
like the beginning
exactly.
of a bad joke.
Yeah, it is. It is a bit. It's missing the third element of a joke. Mm. You know, the one that masks the other two unusual dudes in the joke. But yeah, it's very close to it.
So if we add like a horse in there.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Two, an atheist, agnostic, and a horse. Obviously, your attention is supposed to be on the two atheists.
Well, you know,
the horse
is
the ridiculous one.
Here's the punchline. This is how they're all the same. None of them give a shit about God. And that's really the core fundamental thing about them all, I think.
Well, this is what's interesting. I had, before I did the bonus show, I kind of prepared a little bit for it. I've been thinking about it for a couple weeks. This is the other thing, too. If you make a suggestion for the show, give me some time to think about it. I don't want to just... It takes, you know, weeks at the pace that I'm at these days. It takes weeks to really kind of like start to gel these ideas.
So have you been bouncing this thing around? Is this like
I was bouncing
saying
around.
Like 7 months ago we got this request?
No. This was more like 2 weeks ago before I went on vacation, essentially. So I read this and then I leave on vacation saying I'm not going to record shows for a whole week. And in that time... I had read the email. I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, I'd really like to give it some thought because I want to be able to go back and listen to what I had to say and say, yeah, okay, good. That's a good position to have. I don't want to just spew some fucking nonsense, kind of like this is a mailbag question where you just have to fucking come up with it on the spot. No,
now you're just demeaning the mailbag.
I'm saying the mailbag is fine, but if a person asked me to do that in a mailbag episode, I think I would have thought about it a lot less.
True.
So that's why I'm suggesting, hey, you patrons, if rather than just sort of mailbag question, tickle my mind with some of your questions. Tickle my mind. So the subject that had tickled my mind, obviously, agnosticism versus atheism. And it reminded me of one of the shows that we had done a couple of weeks ago where I was talking about unstated assumptions. I don't know if you remember that that particular show.
Well, for the people who might not listen to every single one, right. You want to give us a little bit of a recap?
See, that's why you're here, man. That's a good reminder. Yes, the recap is basically anytime you profess belief in something or even non-belief in something, you should be stating your unstated assumptions. Because a person who says that You know, it has an argument with you about there being a God, or, you know, if they're religious and you're an atheist, and they tell you that you're equally dogmatic in your belief. Well, if you both ask each other to lay out the unstated assumptions that they have, you'll notice that theists typically have much more assumptions, or many more assumptions than you do. In fact, you have no assumptions. That is essentially your assumption, really. It is the lack of evidence of a thing that makes you take the position of atheism. It's like, you came up with trolls. I'm an atheist about trolls. I see no reason to believe if evidence does not exist. It is a non-idea until you can prove it. This is the assumption that you make, and it's a very simple assumption. But to believe in God is, you have to state a certain amount of them. I'm not going to review them. Go back and listen to the show, if you can, because I want to continue on. But essentially, my thought about how we can compare atheism to agnosticism is just painting it in the same kind of picture. What is it that, as an agnostic, what are the unstated assumptions that you're making? Because, you know, they'll state, for instance, that it is the more skeptical thing, you know, skeptical mind frame to say, well, there's no evidence for or against it. Therefore, it's better to hold a neutral position about it, to say, well, I have no way to discern whether or not it's true or false. Therefore, I will choose the middle ground. So, but unfortunately, that unstated assumption is that the evidence for both the existence of a God and the non-existence of a God are assumed to be the same in that very simplistic view of agnosticism, mm-hmm. of saying, I just don't know. But the truth is that we do know some things. And everything that we know, in fact, everything that we have known, every bit of fucking evidence that we've ever uncovered says no. Then all of a sudden, yes, there's still a matter of it being possible. And I think that any atheist has to admit to a degree of agnosticism of saying, of course, you know, the fucking evidence comes around. Yeah, for sure, I'll switch sides. Go ahead, show me that there's a fucking God in heaven and justice. You know, cosmic fucking justice, for one. Just show me that that's true, and I'll be like, delighted, yay, it's true. So I view agnosticism as a degree rather than necessarily a really sound position.
I find it to be, you know, it's basically piddling over what word you want to use to describe your general state of non-believing or really non-giving a shit. I mean, we've talked about it before where we said that agnostics are fence sitters to a degree. And the big problem with that being, we're getting, you know, I'm sure it's kind of like a revelation type situation where all religious people always think they're living in the end times, and all atheists always think things are getting really hot now, and we really have to, you know, shit or get off the pot and really start, you know, putting our foot down about what we believe, because things are happening right now.
The alarmist side of, you know, both extremities of belief, you know.
But an agnostic is the kind of person who's more likely to ignore a lot of the problems that religion is causing, while an atheist is the kind of person who seems to stand up more and say, this is bunk.
Yeah, it's true that you do notice a certain level of placatedness. Like, the real undercurrent of agnosticism is a current of undecision. We don't want to make any decisions regarding this issue.
Well, it's not so much undecision, more that they don't want to take side. They don't want to get involved. They want to stay out of that entirely.
But, to some degree, I can kind of understand. I've talked to a lot of people that just don't want to get involved. My attitude, though, is don't sabotage my efforts. You know, there was a couple of different blogs that commented on this one article in Slate that was about agnosticism and saying, like, oh, well, you know, atheists are, you know, completely as dogmatic as, you know, their religious counterparts. And this is why, you know, agnosticism is a non-dogma, and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden you're like, what the fuck? You're supposed to be the douchebag that doesn't do anything. Meanwhile, you come in here, you're saying, you slap me in the face with your gigantic erect dick, saying, listen to me now. How dare you? How fucking dare you? You're a fence sitter. That is the definition of you. You're a fucking fence sitter. And then you go around and you have the balls to say that an atheist is as dogmatic as a religious person because they have taken a particular, a non-stance, really, about the issue of God, of saying, there is no evidence of this. I will not believe what there is no evidence for. And you're saying, that's dogmatism. I'm sorry, what? Are you serious? That the position for everything that has any degree of uncertainty is always a 50-50 split between belief and unbelief?
Well, it goes with that larger trend of today's society where they want to have a situation where both sides can be right. And it's a very stupid wrong thing, and it's causing the end of the world!
Oh my God!
Get off the fence now, people, before it's too late!
I'm so afraid, Ryan.
I'm going to hell in a handbasket, if hell exists. And I guess it's going to be full of horses.
Because it's going to go to nothingness in a handbasket.
Don't horses go to hell? Isn't that another thing about
horses
it?
Horses go to hell?
Yeah, I'm tying back to the atheist, agnostics, and horses. We all go to hell, I guess.
I guess so. I guess, what's horse hell like?
I don't know. I was wondering about that, whether or not...
Maybe Earth is horse hell, you know, when we enslave them and ride them. Maybe that just sucks.
Horse hell is kindergarten, where they get used to make glittery crafts.
the glue factory is probably hell for a horse. Hopefully we won't get sent to some kind of, you know, atheist glue factory, but I don't think I can guarantee anything.
It's true. Because we're not being dogmatic about it.
We're not being dogmatic about it. So just to round out, just to complete the thought on agnosticism, because I'm sure that there's going to be people who disagree, people that listen to the show and that are themselves agnostic, but I'm going to tell them the same thing that I told my sister when she went from being an agnostic to being an atheist. Not because I think it has some special power that'll convert you to atheism, but just because I think you need to hear it and at least acknowledge that this is true. That if right now, and probably most of your life, I'm going to assume, if you have not believed at all, if you said, well, you know, there's no evidence either way, guess what? You don't believe in God. God is a belief that requires you to follow it. When you don't, when you're like, I'm on the fence, then guess what? You don't believe. That is exactly the definition here. They force you to believe. And if you go around saying, well, I don't, or I don't know, yeah, you don't. You actually don't. You still think that you're being fair about the question. You haven't been fair about it the whole time that you've called yourself an agnostic, probably. Where you just knew, but you were like, I want to cover my bases. Or in the case of, say, my sister, is I didn't want to rock the boat and upset the people around me that are religious. I wanted to take the neutral stance that was kind of the peacekeeping stance. And I can accept and appreciate that fucking stance because not everybody needs to be like Jacob Fortin. Okay? You don't need to be like me. There's only a few of me that should be around. We're the crazies, you know? We're the loud ones. We're the ones that are sort of like, rah, iconoclastic, and tear everything down. We're just like, you can't listen to like 100 of us. You go crazy. You need a bit of a balanced opinion, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe we can go back to like the olden days where the general idea was religion and politics were the two things that you never wanted to talk about because they were just, they caused conflict. It's better just to not bring it up in polite company.
Well, speaking of that, if you're listening to the show and you don't normally visit the site, I recommend that you do because there's a video that I want you to watch, people. It's basically this video of a guy called Michael Voris, and he has a show called The Vortex.
Well, it's not a real show. It's like
it's
an internet
web show. I'm not going to say real show and not real show. If you fucking put something out there and you have a million views, guess what you got?
Does he have a million views?
Well, I don't know. Actually, here's a good question. Let me see how many views he has. Okay, he has 23,000 views. So 23,000 people have seen his show. You know, those are bigger numbers than what we can pull
on any given episode.
And we call ourselves a show. We have the gall to call ourselves a show, sir.
Yeah, I know, but I wouldn't say we're a real show. I'd say we're one of them wacky podcasty things.
We're a fake show. Mm-hmm. In one day, we'll become real, everybody. I can't wait for that day.
I just wanted to make sure that people weren't thinking that this was like on actual television, because he is quite a wingnut.
Well, he's let's just say his wing nuttery involves, you know, something saying that what the world needs is a benevolent Catholic dictatorship, a theocracy, if you will. Not even being subtle about it, saying, oh, we need more religious government. No. It's we need a pontiff that rules everything because that worked out so good for Europe.
Yeah, the way the whole thing works is that his little webisode thing is called the Vortex because his name vaguely sounds like Vortex. So he calls it the Vortex, and he basically says the democracy is flawed because anybody can vote, and that includes ignorant people and unfaithful people. And basically, and this is where it gets fun, is he doesn't just say... that educated people should be allowed to vote. He says that only the virtuous. Yeah. And then when he defines what virtuous is, he says only Catholics should be allowed to vote. And then he says, actually, what we do need is we just need a benevolent dictator, a Catholic monarch.
Who's going to make the choices for you, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Because thy will... What was the passage he said at the end where he's basically tying it, saying that it on earth as it is in heaven basically implies the idea that you've got one God, one king up in heaven, so we should have that one king down on earth too.
Yeah, if you ever wonder why religions crave power, specifically monotheistic religions, is because there's a really appealing element to that one shall rule. You know, that whole power corrupts absolutely, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. There's a reason for that, because when you think that you were a god, which every person who's put in a position, a godly position, if you will come to believe, you know, to some degree, you think that a guy like Ratzinger doesn't see himself as some sort of, like, that he channels God, ergo he is a god. He's the avatar of God here on earth. This is what this man calls himself. Hello? Maybe because we're so used to it, we don't even accept the fact that there's a billion people that listen to this fucking nut job. You know, that by his own definition of what he is, he should be considered insane. But we don't see it that way. This is the avatar of God. What do you do with most avatars of God who aren't billionaires?
You lock them up in a padded cell.
Yeah, for a long time. It's called the Jerusalem Syndrome, actually. And, you know, it's not even that much of a religious nod. It's just because that's where it kept on happening, because all of these messianic people have been floating around there for fucking 2,000 years. It just doesn't end. It does not end. These crazy people who think they're talking to some invisible deity that commands that everything should be ruled under their iron thumb. Yeah, that sounds like a fucking great world. I want to go live there.
I did enjoy the fact that this guy, his big issues, the three things that he was ragging on when he was talking about what's wrong with democracy and how democracy is ruining everything, is he was basically saying that things are going to shit because of gay marriage,
right?
Abortion,
of course,
and taxes.
Yeah,
taxes crushing families.
I really wonder who he's trying to appeal to there. It's always funny how that's the same messages that come out again and again. I've started reading The Family by Jeff Charlotte. I bought that book. That was like the one book I said, I need to read this. This is significant. I want to really have a good understanding of this.
Of like the crazy Christianist American right-wing movement.
And, you know, truth be told, Charlotte's a great writer. I mean, the book is a pleasure to read. It's just very dense. That's the thing about it. The writing is tiny. There's so many words per page. You realize, whoa, this is a massive paperback here.
What? Too small. You need bigger typeface?
No, it's not that I need bigger typeface. It's that you always look at a book and you're saying, hey, you know, it looks like it's 250 pages. It's a paperback. You figure I'm going to blow through this motherfucker. Mm. But the influence of typeface has a huge impact on the speed in which you can read. Let me tell you what. All right, put font 12 on your fucking Microsoft Word, then go to font 8, and then tell me how long it takes to read both pages. You're going to be like, damn, it took me a long time. And it's not just that. It's like the condensing of ideas as well. You know, he's packing a lot. You can just tell how much research he's telling, exactly where he is, what's going on. You know, like a proper book in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fluff piece. So when you're just like, oh, well, I'm going to have to really sit down with this motherfucker and actually just...
Slowly digest,
exactly. But more to the point, it's just every single organization that you can possibly imagine that is always springing up, this ultra-religious organization, if they have the word family in it, forget about it. They're ultra-conservative. It's the word of the day. Family. That's the word that they've chosen to associate religion with. Family. And this is also the way that they've, you know, this is their wedge strategy for, say, gay marriage is a perfect example. You know, they're like, our wedge strategy is to say it's destroying families. And funny enough, they managed to wedge in abortion into this whole family matter as well. So it's always related back to family. This is the basic, you know, this is the thing that they've latched onto. And because it is an ideology that, you know, shares other commonalities. Probably the most basic commonality that anyone has is the sense of family.
Yeah, and the idea that families are generally a good thing.
Right, exactly. They're a necessary thing in this world. The people without families are the people that you pity. You're saying, oh no, he lost his family.
Yeah, at least
it's like losing your precious little treasure.
Until we reboot society into some crazy Robert Heinlein style science fiction situation where we no longer need families,
we're gonna
say that they're a good thing.
Yeah. So they associate themselves with a good thing, and now how are you supposed to detach them from it? Because as soon as you try to say what the fuck is wrong with you, you have nothing to do with family, and everything to do with control. And you know, I think as a broad principle of what I fear about guys like this and what I fear about religion in general is essentially how they create and set up systems of control. So say something as simple as the diet of Jewish people, right? Of Jews. You look at their diet. It's very restrictive.
Or shout out to Ramadan right now. Ramadan.
Right. Exactly. Or in Islam, like the necessary conditions of diet. You know, the Christians had no meat on Friday. There are rules that they make you follow, and the rules are arbitrary. They're even probably pretty dumb. But the purpose of the rules is to guarantee one fucking thing, that you listen. Because this is a system of control, and if you are the type of person that is, you know, contentious and says, I don't know if I buy into this food thing, well, guess what you are? You are a problem to these systems of authority. You are the kind of problem that a, say, benevolent dictator, if there's never a fucking ironic phrase, if I ever heard one, a benevolent dictator, but to say that a benevolent dictator wouldn't also crushingly suppress any level of dissension. I mean, honestly, what the fuck do you think is going to happen?
Well, what do you think would happen in a world where there was a Catholic benevolent dictator monarchy in America?
I think that as soon as they would, the day one of their power reign is the day that you would see many changes happening. Kind of like a Night of the Long Knives, if you will. You know, many things don't change gradually when there are certain very sinister powers that are about, right? Shit happens fast. You know, and besides, we live in a world where shit can happen fast, you know, like a whole country can be war ready in minutes. Could you imagine such a time before? A whole country? I mean, give me a break. You declare war, and by the time it reached the other end of your country, the war is probably over. Now it's 8 minutes. 8 minutes, and that's all you need to even annihilate all life on Earth. 8 minutes. That doesn't seem to me like a good amount of time. So you're saying, what would happen if a system of authority, a frightening system of authority, could gain absolute power tomorrow? Everything that you know, you better throw out the fucking window. I'm telling you that right now. Throw it out the window. Like the people who were living in, say, a peaceful Germany that was open to artistic expression in the 1930s. Throw that fucking out the window. We have now extremism. And we're going to reintroduce you to it. And the way that you do that is saying, like, okay, you, and you, you're dead. You're literally dead.
Off to Siberia.
If you're lucky. You get an extra week to live on that one, because that's how long the trip will take you that kills you. So you're gonna take a trek of death. Maybe it is better to just say, can you just finish me now? Seriously? I don't want to go to the road of bones, man. I don't want to do that. So yeah, change can be pretty fucking drastic. That's why this is alarming. This is really alarming to me. And again, I mean, it's ironic that we were talking about how alarmist we are. But when,
you know, I mean,
when
this is maybe
this
one
is
of,
an alarming thing to say. When you're in all seriousness, you're like, let's fucking be serious for a second. There's a problem with democracy. Excuse me, pardon me. Like, what is the problem? The problem is that people that you consider to be uneducated, essentially people that have different opinions than you, are not worthy of voting.
I think my favorite thing about what he said about the fallibilities of voters was the idea that the reason that you can't trust democracy is because we are fallen, and therefore we look only towards ourselves instead of towards God. And I'm like, wow, that's nicely poetic if it wasn't pure God, like ridiculous bullshit.
What garbage. What garbage. Do you think the men who have power, say the Vatican, do you think they're really looking up to God? I mean, if their concept of God is one of just sort of omnibenevolence and omniscience and so on and so forth, would they really think, hey, all these kids that are being raped, would an omnibenevolent God really think that that's all right? They don't give a shit. You do not give a shit. God thinks what you think. You'll notice this of every religious person you've ever fucking met. All right? Guaranteed. Ask them how they feel about abortion. Is that the way that God feels? Yes. You'll have a yes to every fucking question, even the questions that contradict one another. And then you're like, oh, I get it now. God believes exactly what you believe. Well, that's not a scary fucking prospect where you're saying that some entity that does not need to answer to anything or anyone...
or any logic.
Believes in exactly the same thing that you do. Right. Okay. That seems like a really logical position to hold. But hey, apparently everybody just believes it so much and for so long that that's the normal thing. That you'd be like, oh, you're abnormal for not thinking that an omnipotent deity thinks exactly what you think.
Take away his right to vote.
Take it away. He's ignorant. I'm sure they're going to play it on, you know, they're going to have to play it on Daily Show or on Rachel Maddow. That you just have to. I mean, this is just that kind of plum... is just too sweet.
I think that's just the kind of plum that the internet serves up on a very regular basis. It's no different from the millions of other plums you will find out there too. I mean, I posted up that random video of just people rolling around on the floor and barking like dogs in that Eastern European church, and you'd think that that would make people raise a couple eyebrows, but it's just, that's normal religious ridiculousness.
Yeah, but I mean, that is too close to offending someone. When it's quite clear that a person threatens democracy, which is a very important root concept of Americans, which is why I don't think the idea is dangerous, because I think that people believe
because it's hilariously
more
yeah
than they do in this Catholic theocracy that this man has suddenly, you know, envisaged for all, us all.
I did like how it had to be Catholic and the Protestants were not involved. That was really cool, is that he didn't even just go for a Christian.
No.
Because so often nowadays, all these religions kind of unite under that Christian banner, especially against them Muslims.
They scare them. They scare them more than they've hated each other. And trust me when I say that hate was powerful indeed. Enough to murder others that did not believe in this exactly the same thing as you. Mm. You know, religious wars, yeah, they're real. The things that happen, they're inside religions. They're disagreements about nonsense. Murder is disagreement about nonsense.
Well, disagreements on what you think is evil and what you think is good. And what's more important than what is right and what is wrong.
I think, though, that that's what we often get ourselves caught into, where you really think the stakes are that high. And that's just the height of arrogance, if you ask me. That we always talk about our behavior as this sort of good or evil thing. And I'm saying, in the context of the universe, who gives a shit, honestly? No one really does. They're human concepts. They matter to us. They don't matter to anybody else. So we should realize that to some degree, they don't matter to the larger context. They don't matter. So that's the whole, hey, stop getting murderous about something because it doesn't matter at the end of the day. These weird beliefs that you think are the goods and evils that need to be fought. As soon as you get to the stage where you're like, I'm going to kill you for not believing the same thing, is the part where we should all be slow the fuck down, you know, calm the fuck down here. That's not necessary, okay? That is not necessary. We live in a society that's not really necessary. Okay, we incarcerate, we try to punish people who do wrong things. You can say whether or not it's flawed or not another time, but we all recognize it as a fucking deterrent for bad behavior. We don't deny it. And we set up rules, right? We set up rules that people can kind of agree on. And then we live with those rules, and we're happy with those rules. Because they don't force us to kill anybody else. That's like, if that was your defining factor, if my rule doesn't require that I kill you, it's probably a pretty good rule. You know, it might not be something I agree with, but as long as you're not going to fucking kill me, we can have a discussion about this. We can talk. So I would say that, yeah, you know, you look at it in the context of good and evil in that perspective, saying, you know, take it down a notch too. You know, the stakes are so high for abstract concepts. They really are not. They're not. Once you pop the bubble of delusion and religion, you wonder what the fuck the big deal was. Well, why are you worried about it?
That's why I think so many atheists are so incredulous when it comes to religious people's opposition to gay marriage. Because really, who gives a damn what other people call their husbands or wives? What they call their union?
Exactly. I'm like, they're together. Why can't they have a stupid little piece of paper? Who gives a shit? And I'm sure that's how most people feel. But again, you know, that whole thing on agnosticism. That
God just cares.
Someone out there cares, and they don't like your non-caring. They will remove your choice away. You know, when you're agnostic and you're figuring, I'm just going to take the neutral stance because that's how my rights can be preserved. Well, you have to be wary of those guys, agnostics. You have to fucking talk about them too. These religious individuals that want to force that on other people. And although you might think that that is a small percentage of folks, I think it's only the natural goodness in people that doesn't force them to force religion on other people. You know, they're not going to do it themselves because they're too polite. They'll pay an organization to do it for them. But they'll be nice people, but they will pay an evil organization to corrupt people's minds. But they're perfectly nice. Yeah, you have to have a conversation with the people who provide the support networks for the crazies.
Speaking about payments, this is the funny thing, because it's kind of like a Star Trek Mirror Mirror episode.
Yep.
Looking at these guys, because these guys with their fake show is similar to our fake show.
So much so.
Because at the end of their crazy video where he's like, all hail the Christian monarchy in America.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Catholic.
Right.
Only Catholics.
Only Catholic,
dirty,
dude.
Protestants, go to hell. They said, if you wanna hear more, then support us and get a membership. Sound familiar?
Hey, do you think we inspired these guys? You know, no, actually, his inspiration came from the Pope. So apparently, he's got these gigantic blinders on, and he felt that Ratzinger's call to reignite the faith, specifically Catholicism, in light of what Catholics have always been calling plurality and relativism, is what they fear. They fear kind of the amalgamation of their beliefs. Mm-hmm. They fear parts of their cultures being adapted and sort of commandeered, because then it removes their necessity.
It would remove their uniqueness. I always figured it was good for Catholicism, because it's such a stupid religion when you take a closer look at it. All the stupid crap that's been added over the years by everybody at the Vatican. I mean, really.
It's pretty, when you think about how silly this whole business is, really, that they're debating about the existence or non-existence of make-believe places, and you're thinking, what is this, Dungeons and Dragons here? Dungeons and fucking Dragons is what they're having. It's like, oh, there's no more limbo. And you're like, why not? Well, it turns out that in Africa, lots of kids die of starvation, and their parents are upset by the fact that their kids are in limbo. So I'm saying, well, you know what? There's a problem there that you're not seeing.
Even though you're the dungeon master, you don't get to change the rules like that.
What the fuck?
Gary Gygax would not approve.
That is not an approved change for any good dungeon master or religious pontiff. Not cool. Not cool. But yeah, they do this all the time. So they're making stuff up. But it's been around. It's been part of. It's in ingrained in the culture and influential in the culture. That parts of it have permeated. They're inevitably part of our dialogue. You know, when we use certain words, when I say the Garden of Eden, right? There are certain cultural influences related to that phrase. You cannot deny the influence of that culture. It is a product of that. But what Christians don't realize, and this is what I think the deliciousness of how culture works, is that so much of Catholicism was actually influenced by pagan Rome. Right, that the architecturally, the way that, you know, saints work very much like patron gods and so on and so forth. These are all influences of an older culture, one that if you just said, "Hey, this is paganistic," they would deny it. They would flat out deny it. Just the way that, you know, it would be foolish for me to deny that my culture is a result of the appropriation of another culture, of Catholicism. We've appropriated it. We've done what we wanted with it. We make cool movies, or we make like little, you know, icons. Like if you see little wings on people, you're like in a video game, you're like, oh, you died.
All those douchebags walking around with skulls and crosses on their shirts and fleur-de-lis upside down
right.
For some reason.
Just the amalgamation of culture, things that we like that we don't always maintain the meaning to. I mean, even the word inspiration is actually it's a Latin word meaning to breathe out. Or something's being breathed on you. And it comes from a translation of Greek that was actually the opposite, where it was just upon a breath. But the Latin version developed a kind of like another version, which is what the classic version that we have of inspiration now. When I talk about it, we don't talk about something that's being breathed upon you. We talk about, you know, like an influence on you, like I am inspired, something is happening, right? And what's funny too about inspired is that the when I was mentioning the Greco-Roman tradition of Catholicism, that word existed before the concept that they had of, say, how divine inspiration works. It existed before. This is just one example of a cultural tradition that goes from Greco, or, you know, from the Greeks to Latin, to, you know, permeating through, you know, Catholicism and that influence on Europe to finally our English language, the soup of culture that we stir from, where inspiration you don't even think about its kind of religious roots. It has other meaning for you as well. It's taken on life of its own. And I think it's hilarious that religions are kind of like systems that always try to maintain control over that culture. They're like, we don't want to change. We don't want to be influenced by it. We want to push everything else out. And as a result, they're archaic. They're barbaric. They're
on the wrong side of history.
They're on the wrong side
of history. Over and over again.
Yep. I mean, you see it right then. And what I was saying before about the difference between guys like them in terms of their membership and guys like us in terms of our membership is we don't create a system of control. We're not about control. We're about the very opposite of control. You know, we're about choice.
Well, I don't know. I mean, atheists as a general group, I mean, you've got those people in France trying to bar the burqa. Well, and that's trying to influence control. I mean, atheists are just as capable of influencing control, of trying to make their system be the system.
Well,
and
I don't think these people are acting necessarily, and well, I would say definitely not acting on their atheism. I think what they may be working on is a combination of other things. You know, fear of culture, of other cultures, and it may not be necessarily an unjustified fear of this other religious culture that's trying to influence their own culture, of saying, well, what aspects of your culture are you inviting in? Many of these aspects we don't agree with, particularly how you treat women. And this is what the burqa represents to that. Remember when I was saying that we were not having the right discussions on one of our shows, where I was saying the conversation about the burqa is not necessarily a conversation about you know, religious bigotry, which is how it'll be framed, because there are many people that are religious bigots that will want to do it for that bigoted reason. But the better the question that we should bring up is sort of like, what degree of control do we exercise over culture? Because maybe we have it backwards. Maybe cultural influences are supposed to happen rather than be forced apart. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think we should think about it. You know, I am not for the banning of the burqa per se. I am for the discussion. I'm for everybody hammering it out before I make a fucking decision.
The discussion of the banning?
Yeah. The fucking discussion that nobody's having. I'm sick and tired of it. I'm like, I need all the arguments to be flushed out. I can't just think about them myself. Like, what are some of the arguments that other people have thought about that I can hear? You know, the justification either for or against. And I'm my position, my requirement, if you will, is to listen to that with as open a mind as possible, weary of the consequences of the decisions that the systems of control that we may adopt.
I'll just put it out there. There have been no compelling good arguments for banning it that really show it to be an effective thing to do. I mean, as far as what they're trying to accomplish, I see, but it wouldn't work even if they did it, and therefore it's not the right way to go.
I think that there's a problem at a different route that can be tackled.
A different way to go about it.
And have better results. Like, I think that when you put up those kinds of walls,
it's like when people talk online communities. What happens when you get fucking thrown off an online community? You just got ban hammered. And a ban is a hammer. It's a blunt, clumsy instrument, and what we need in a situation like this is something a little bit more, I don't know, intelligent, well thought out, not as heavy-handed.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a situation where we haven't been as adult as we can be regarding this, because we always have those fear of offending people, because some of the conclusions that we reach may be offensive to some, of saying, like, if there's a real correlation between you know, women that were in burqas and domestic abuse.
Well, I mean, the problem is when you strip away the God aspect, the only reason to cover your women up is because they're your, like, property and you're controlling them. So
it's a system of control.
That's that really root problem is that, you know, on its face, taking away God, it's disgusting.
It's even worse. At least when they try to justify it in God, you can kind of understand their delusion because so many people share it.
But I'll spread it out across all religions. I'll say cutting off your foreskin is fucked up too.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
But that doesn't oppress you for your entire life the same way that, you know, having to wear a black sheet.
Having to not get educated or learn things. You know, and if I could tie it back to the whole parts we were having about, discussions we were having about culture, I think the great irony about the burqa is really it stems from an older tradition that predates Islam. Comes from, I think, Syria, is the use of these headscarves, like just a variety of different headscarves. That's a cultural thing. I think it actually comes from, it does come from Syria. So it's like an African tradition as well. So you notice... the justification for anybody who wears the burqa, that you have to really understand too, the context is that nowhere even in the Quran is it mentioned, but or forced upon them, other than say you need to dress modestly, fucking take it with a grain of salt, is the way that most people see it. But the reason why some people chose to have say the hadith, which is the smaller version, just the scarf version, the reason they chose that was because that's how people had to speak to Muhammad's wives, like through veils, and they had to wear veils themselves. That was it. That was the only people that needed to be veiled was Muhammad's wives. So that cultural tradition makes its way into Islam, and then there are different interpretations of how that's going to play out based on, you know, tribalism and customs and so on and so forth. Now you have a justification for basically saying, well, you're not going to go out in anything.
And I don't want any other man looking upon you because God knows what's going to happen then.
Right, exactly. It's a system of control. It allows you to control, essentially the sexual fate of your females. And I'm sure it's very effective. I'm sure that if we looked at rates of, pregnancies due to infidelity, it would probably be lower. It would not be zero. I can promise you that there is no way to make that zero.
Yeah, because like Jurassic Park, sex finds a way.
Life finds a way. But yeah, perhaps the rate is lower. And what a terrible consequence. What a horrible negative externalities. What purpose does that save? Huh? You selfish, and genetic genetically mined monkey, you embarrass me.
And this is where agnostics should jump off the fence, because that's when the realization comes that for the most part, these religions, they often end up, you know, for religions that are supposed to help the world and make the world a better place, there's just too many instances where they throw out things like that.
Well, religion is a culture, right? And it comes with a lot of baggage. And we're forced to inherit that baggage. And a lot of it is not stuff you want. Even if you say, I can sit on the fence and I don't have to think about this. The honest truth is that you have to think about it. It is, you cannot simply ignore guys like this douchebag that we were talking about.
Mr. Vortex.
Mr. Vortex. You cannot ignore him. You absolutely cannot. And that pretty much rounds out the show. I think we're going to call it quits. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good show. I'd like to thank everybody who contributed and who continue to contribute. For however long we decide to keep doing it, however long we continue to be inspired to do so. And that we hope that's going to be a long time. So thank you for your patronage. We appreciate it. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody. Mm-hmm.